We'll see how long this lasts. Okay.
Because Sefer Mishlei, as I said, is one of the lesser learned Sfarim in Tanakh, what I want to do today is really kind of give us an introduction to the Sefer. I know that personally, when I learn a new Sefer, I like getting a sense of what the Sefer is going to be about, or what the Sefer is in general, what the purpose of the Sefer is, what the general message is of the Sefer, and so that's what we're going to focus on tonight, although I'm going to try to make it into a shir. It's not going to just be like some boring, dry introduction, but it is going to be with the purpose not of learning one particular mashal in Sefer Mishlei, but just trying to understand what is going on in Sefer Mishlei in general. So the two main questions we're going to ask are, one, who is the author of Sefer Mishlei? And two, what was his purpose in writing Sefer Mishlei? What was his motivation in writing it? What was the purpose ultimately in writing it? And what, obviously, how can we benefit from learning it ourselves? So to answer all these questions, I'd like you to turn to source number one, at least to begin with the source sheet. Source number one is Mishlei Perek Aleph, and the first pasuk of Mishlei really tells us everything we need to know. Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. The author of Mishlei is Shlomo. Melech Shlomo, the king, the son of David HaMelech, Melech Shlomo, who ruled over Bnei Yisrael, and his life story is actually written in the beginning of Melachim Aleph, just to give you some, you know, context. We're not going to go into Melachim Aleph so much, but that is where we know Shlomo from. And in fact, Mishlei is not the only Sefer that Shlomo authored. We know that Shlomo authored a total of 3 Sfarim. If you turn to source number 2, Shir Shirim Rabbah explains very clearly, Gimel Sfarim Katav, right, there are 3 Sfarim that Shlomo wrote, Mishlei v'Kohelet Shir HaShirim. Right, we have Mishlei, we have Kohelet, and we have Shir HaShirim. Then the Shir Shirim Rabbah, the Medrash goes on to try to figure out in which order Shlomo wrote these 3 Sfarim throughout the course of his life. Which one came first, which one came last, and obviously it's a Midrash, we have a Machloket. What is the Machloket? Eze mehen katav tchila, right? Which one did he write first? Rabbi Chiya Rabba or Rabbi Yonatan? So it's a machloket, an argument between Rabbi Chiya Rabba and Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Chiya Rabba amar Mishlei katav tchila. Rabbi Chiya Rabba claims that Mishlei was written first. Ve'acharechein shir hashirim ve'acharkach kohelet. First Mishlei, then shir hashirim, then kohelet. Umiyate la mahaikra. And this Rabbi Chiya Rabba brings a proof from the following pasuk, from Melachim Aleph actually. Vayidaber gimel alafim mashal, mashal zeh sefer Mishlei, vayihi shiro chamisha ve'elef zeh shir hashirim, v'kohelet basof amar. So there's a pasuk in Melachim Aleph that we'll actually get to soon, in which it says that Shlomo spoke 3,000 mashal, mishalim, which Rabbi Chiya Rabba attributes to sefer Mishlei. And then the pasuk continues, vayihi shiro chamisha ve'elef. And he wrote 1,005 songs, and Rabbi Chiya Rabba says that this is really a hint to Shir Shirim Rabba, to Shir Shirim. Therefore, we have, because the Mishalim are discussed in Melachim Aleph before his Shir, Mishlei must have been written before Shir HaShirim, and then Kohelet obviously comes at the end. Rabbi Yonatan argues with him and says, Rabbi Yonatan Amar, Shir HaShirim katat tchila, ve'achar kach Mishlei, ve'achar kach Kohelet. No, Shir HaShirim came first, Mishlei was in the middle, and then Kohelet was at the end. U'miyatzi la Rabbi Yonatan miderech eretz. Rabbi Yonatan learns this not from a pasuk in Tanakh, but rather from the way of the world, from human life, really. Kisha adam na'ar omer divrei zemer. Because when a man is young, during our youth, we sing songs, we're poetic. Higdil omer divrei mishalot. Then he gets a little older and he starts speaking in parable. He starts being a little bit more complex. His kin Omer Divrei Hevelim, and then when he's older, he says everything is hevel, everything is futile, and that is basically the subject matter of Kohelet. Rabbi Yane Chamoy de Rabbi Ami Amar Hakol Moldim SheKohelet B'Sof Amra. So everyone here agrees that Kohelet was last. The question is whether Mishlei was the first Sefer or the second Sefer, but either way, it's towards the beginning of his life. Kohelet is when he got a little bit more mature as he got older, according to the Shir HaShirim Rabba. Okay, so that's it for background. I don't even know if this is still working. Oh, it is. Okay. Good. So now the question that I want to deal with for basically the rest of this year is, what motivated Shlomo to write a Sefer of Mishalim? Right, we know from Melachim Aleph that he wrote 3,000 Mashal, but why? Right, what would be his purpose? And I think as a corollary to that, why Mishalim specifically? What does a Mashal have to do with anything, really? What is the purpose of a Mashal? And I think that the key to understanding why Shlomo wrote Sefer Mishlei to begin with is really found in Melachim Aleph. If you turn to source number 3, Menachem Aleph Perek Gimel. I gave you a lot of psukim here, but I actually want to focus on the psukim on page 2, so you can flip over the page for a minute. In the psukim on page 2, or really in all the psukim here, Menachem Aleph Perek Gimel is really the story in which we have Hashem's first encounter with Shlomo, or rather Shlomo's first encounter with Hashem. Shlomo has just become king, David has just died, and Hashem basically appears to him in a dream and says, Shlomo, I'll give you whatever you want. What do you want? Right? This is basically the genie in the bottle. You can have one wish, whatever you want, what will you choose? Shlomo could have chosen wealth, he could have chosen happiness, he could have chosen children, he could have chosen anything in the world, fame, fortune, anything. What does Shlomo choose in Pasuk Tet? Verse 9, V'natata la'avdecha lev shomea lishpot et amcha. Please give your servant a heart that listens in order to judge your people. Lahavin bein tov l'ra, in order to understand the difference between good and bad. Ki mi yuchal lishpot et amcha ha'kaved hazeh. Because who can judge your heavy nation, your difficult nation? And so we see here that of all the things that Shlomo could have asked, he asks for wisdom. Specifically, he asks for a lev shomea lishpot et amcha, a listening heart, a heart that can understand in order to judge your nation. Right? Shlomo wants help in his new role of king, and so he asks for wisdom. And we see in Pasuk Dalet, in Perek Hey, source number 4, that in fact Hashem grants his wish, and because he didn't ask for everything else that he could have asked, he got everything else too, you know, fame, fortune, etc. Pasuk Tet, the first pasuk in source number 4, Vayitin Elokim Chachma leShlomo. And therefore Hashem gave wisdom to Shlomo, Utzvuna Harbe Ma'od, and a lot of understanding, Verachav Lev Kechol Asher Asfat Hayam, and a heart as wide as all the sand on the shores of the sea. And so therefore we see that Shlomo became the wisest man of all time. V'tirev Chachmat Shlomo Mechachmat Kol B'nei Kedem. Shlomo was the wisest man of all the ancient men. V'mikol Chachmat Mitzrayim, he was even wiser than all the wisdom in Mitzrayim, etc. And what did he do with this wisdom? So now we're going to get a glimpse into the purpose of Sefer Mishlei. What does Shlomo do with this wisdom? Skip to Pasuk Yudbet, Vayidaber, like the Pasuk that Shir Shirim Rabbah quoted before. Vayidaber Shlosha Alafim Mashal, Vayihi Shiro Chamisha Ve'elef. What he does with his wisdom is he writes it down. He writes down 3,000 Mishalim and 1,005 poems, songs, however you want to interpret this. Okay? It's interesting. He writes it down. Now, assumedly, these 3,000 Mishalim that are referred to are referring, that are mentioned here, are referring to Sefer Mishlei. The only problem is, if you look in source number 5 in Kohelet Rabbah mentions an issue. Because you would assume the 3,000 Mishalim refer to Sefer Mishlei. However, Vayidaber Shlosha Alafim Mashal Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani Chazarnu Al Kol HaMikra V'lo Matzinu Shnitnam Beis Shlomo Ela Karov L'Shmona Me'o Psukim. We look through the entire text of Sefer Mishlei, and we only found 800 psukim. What on earth is Menachem Aleph talking about when it mentions 3,000? Right? Because Mishlei itself only has 800. So is this pasuk in Menachem Aleph that refers to 3,000 Mishalim actually referring to Mishlei? Because if it is, then the numbers seem to be very off. Very off. More than triple times the amount off. And so what we're going to try to figure out now is what on earth this is talking about, and through this discussion we're going to hopefully catch a glimpse of what Shlomo's purpose was, perhaps, in writing Sefer Mishlei. So Kohelet Rabbah continues with its own answer. Kohelet Rabbah answers, Ve'ata mar shloshet alafim. Right? You only find 800 Mishalim, 800 psukim in Sefer Mishlei. However, the pasuk says 3,000. What's going on? Ella milamid shekol pasuk u'pasuk shenit nabei Shlomo, yesh bo shnayim u'shloshat ta'anim. Kohelet Rabbah claims that, no. Sefer Mishlei is being referenced here. However, the reason why the Pasuk in Malachim speaks about 3,000 Mishalim, even though we know that Sefer Mishlei only contains about 800 Pasukim, is because every single Pasuk in Sefer Mishlei has about 2 or 3 meanings. And that's one of the beauties of Mishalim, and here we're going to get into a small, short discussion as to what a Mashal can actually do. A Mashal, a parable, by definition, is an example, right? It's a story, it's an example, it's a use of language, basically, that is, it's using language to convey a deeper message, right? It takes something that's really describing the surface of something, usually by way of metaphor, sometimes by way of simile, sometimes just giving an example of, you know, some story that we can learn from, but it always has a deeper message. So it's always intending to teach us something more. That's actually something that we're going to try to do throughout the course of our monthly shiur, which I hope will, you know, continue, is with every mashal that we're going to learn, how can you take, you know, one pasuk and make it into a 45-minute shiur? The major reason for that is because each mashal has many, many layers of meaning. And that's exactly what the Kohelet Rabbah is talking about here. Yes, it's true that in a text you only find 800 psukim, but in the end of the day you can get 3,000 different understandings of the lessons that Shlomo is trying to teach us, because each mashal is so deep and profound and is so multi-layered that we can learn much from it. As we know, each mashal is basically divided up between the words that are used, the mashal, and the message behind it, which is the nimshal. We're going to be delving into both aspects. Sometimes we'll have to split it into two shiurim, even, because each one is so profound. But we can really learn something from each. And we'll get back to this idea soon. Rashi is a completely different way of understanding how we get from 800 psukim in Mishlei to 3,000 mishalim in Melachim Aleph. If you turn to Rashi in source number 6, Rashi agrees that it is, in fact, referring to Sefer Mishlei. But he has a different way of corresponding the 800 to the 3,000. Rashi in source number 6 says, Shlosha limudei mishalot, shalosh pa'amin katov mishlei shlomo b'sefer mishlei. 3,000 here does not literally mean 3,000 exactly. There aren't 3,000 mishalot in sefer mishlei at all. And we know that. Ah, says Rashi, so why does Malachim Aleph claim that there are 3,000? 3,000 really means three different groups of parables, three different groups of mishalot. And we know, for example, that throughout Tanakh, many times when large numbers are used, they're not necessarily meant to be taken literally and in exact numbers, but rather as a general idea of, you know, a large group of things. So Shlomo himself, actually, for example, in Mishlei, I think, does a lot of, you know, you have three of this and four of this. You have seven of this and eight of this. And he doesn't necessarily mean that you have exactly seven and exactly eight, but he means you have less of this and more of this, right? Numbers are very often used in Tanakh to be a little bit more general, to teach us a general lesson more than being specific. And so Rashi says that 3,000 here is really just hinting to three different groups. And in fact, if you look in source number 7, there are three different headings throughout Sefer Mishlei. In Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, we have the major heading, Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. Right? And that seems to be like the major heading for the whole Sefer. But then, in Perek Yud, we're given basically the same heading. Mishlei Shlomo, and then it continues, Ben Chacham Yismach Av, etc. So you have a new heading in Perek Yud. And then in Perek Chaf, hey, we have an even different heading, which is very similar, I should say, a third heading, Gam Eile Mishlei Shlomo. These are also the Mishalim of Shlomo, Asher Ha'etiku Anshei Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, but these weren't necessarily recorded by Shlomo. They might have been written down by Shlomo, or maybe they were transmitted orally, and then Chizkiyahu, or the people of Chizkiyahu, actually recorded them and wrote them down for posterity. And so according to Rashi, because of these three different headings of Mishlei, we're not going to learn it, but the Gra says, based on these headings, that Mishlei is really divided into three large sections. That the 3,000 Mishalim is really just a general, you know, reference to the three different sections of Sefer Mishlei. And so the difference between 3,000 and 800 doesn't really worry us so much, because 3,000 isn't meant to be taken literally, but rather as three larger sections of Mishalim, three different categories, so to speak, of Mishalim. The last answer that I want to focus on, I think, is the most nuanced and the most interesting, personally. The Ralbag, in source number 8, has a different idea. And he says that perhaps the 3,000 Mishalim are not all referring to Sefer Mishlei itself. If you skip to the second line of the Ralbag, after the ellipsis, the three dots. Ulezeh amar barosh Sefer Mishlei, Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. Right, this is why it says in the beginning of Sefer Mishlei, and he's going to quote some psukim now, so I'll just translate. These are the Mishalim of Shlomo, the son of David, the king of Bnei Israel. Ladat chachma u'musar v'chule. Right, the pasuk continues. Mishlei continues the pasuk bet, saying that these are the Mishalim written down in order to know wisdom, and in order to have knowledge and wisdom and lessons learned, etc., etc. It goes on, and we'll go back to those pasukim inside. Ritzono lomar, what does that mean that these Mishalim are in order to impart knowledge and wisdom and lessons? She'elu ha-Mishalim levad yiyet olatam be'elu ha-inyanim. That the psukim, the Mishalim written in Mishlei, have the purpose of imparting wisdom, of imparting knowledge. She'zacharpo, right? She'hanyanim she'zacharpo, all these things that are mentioned in the beginning of Mishlei. Ve'ulam she'ara Mishalim she'diver Shlomo. But the 2,200 Mishalim that were not written in Sefer Mishlei, they had different purposes. Their purposes were not in order to impart wisdom or to impart knowledge, but they had completely different purposes. And because of that, they weren't included in Mishlei, because they didn't warrant the same level of Kedusha, they didn't have the same level of Kedusha as the Mishalim that were ultimately included in Mishlei. Basically, what the Rabbag is saying is that, yes, Malachim Aleph is correct. Shlomo wrote a total of 3,000 Mishalim, but only 800 of them were included in Sefer Mishlei. The other 2,200 of them were for different purposes. They weren't Tanachic. Right? They weren't worthy of being included, of being, I should say, what's the word now? I'm losing it, canonized in the Bible. They weren't on the same level of Kedusha, and therefore they were separated. But Malachim Aleph is correct. He did write 3,000 Mishalim with all the wisdom he was given. It's just that 800 of them were included in Sefer Mishlei, whose purpose is really to impart knowledge and wisdom and to enhance our spiritual growth, as we'll see very soon. Okay. So that is the Ralbag's approach, and I think that he picks up upon a very, very important nuance here. Because Shlomo's wisdom was all-encompassing. He had wisdom in, I mean, the Pesukim in Melachim talk about how he talked on the trees. He spoke to the trees, he spoke to the animals, he understood nature, he understood science. They compare his wisdom to ancient Egyptian wisdom. He had wisdom that basically, you know, spanned from Torah to Mada to, you know, mathematics to economics to science, everything. Everything was included in Shlomo's wisdom. But Mishlei only encapsulated a piece of that wisdom. Right? And what's interesting is that if you look at Melachim Aleph, I didn't give you all the Pesukim of Melachim Aleph because that would be a little bit silly. If you have a Tanakh, I guess you can open it. But if you look at Melachim Aleph, his wisdom really seems to be focused on his melucha. Really seems to be focused on his reign, on his ability to judge and his ability to lead. If you remember when we read source number 3 in Pasuk Tet, when Shlomo asks for wisdom, he specifically says, Lishpot et amcha. He wants wisdom in order to judge the people. And so what comes out of the wisdom that we're told about in Malachim Aleph is about, you know, his political savvy, right? His ability to really win over the leaders of other nations. For example, Malkat Shva, right? The Queen of Sheba, who comes and is so impressed by Shlomo. We're also told, you know, of other, he does use his wisdom for a Kiddush Hashem. Believe you me, he definitely uses it, the Shem Shemayim, for good purpose. But in Malachim Aleph, it really seems to be focused on the nation, on, you know, politics, on economy, economics, on impressing other dignitaries who come to visit, etc. It really seems to be used. Shlomo in Malachim Aleph really seems to use his chachma to his political advantage, which is not a bad thing, but it really seems to be focused in that area of his life. Whereas if you really, you know, take a minute to look at Sefer Mishlei, and we're going to turn actually back to the beginning in source number 1 now, the wisdom that he imparts to us in Sefer Mishlei is almost like the opposite of that. It has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with his ability to reign. But rather, it has to do with giving B'nai Yisrael the ability to enhance their own Yirat Shamayim, to enhance their own spiritual growth, to enhance their religious observance, etc. And we actually see that in the Pesukim, that he is no longer geared inward, right, to helping himself become a better king, but rather outward to the rest of B'nai Yisrael to help them become better people. And that's why I personally like Mishlei so much, because we really can learn so much from it, even today. Even though we live so many years after Shlomo died, it's amazing how relevant everything he has to say is. But if you look inside in source number 1, we see this very clearly. Right? Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael, Lada'a Chachma u'Musar lahavin imrei vina. His purpose is in order to impart knowledge and wisdom and lessons or rebuke, in order to understand words of understanding. Pasuk Gimel, Lakacha Musar Haskel, in order to take lessons out of what we learn, not just to learn for the sake of learning, right? But that whole idea of Lo Midrash HaIkar Ela HaMaaseh, right? The main thing about learning Torah is not just the intellectual pursuit, even though that's important, and I hope you guys are all here, you know, spending your night learning. I think we all enjoy the intellectual pursuit of learning, but there's something more, right? Lo Midrash HaIkar Ela HaMaaseh, what's important is to take something that you learn and make it applicable to your daily lives, to basically derive and extract the pearls of wisdom, well, to extract from the pearls of wisdom, you know, different things that we can use to apply to our own lives and to enhance our religious observance, our connection to Hashem, our spiritual growth, etc. And that's what a Musar Haskel is. Musar Haskel is really taking a lesson and applying it to our lives. Tzedek u'mishpat u'misharim. So here what's really interesting is the way that Mitzvah David translates these last three, because he shows us that these three things, Tzedek, Mishpat, and Misharim, really show us how Shlomo was trying to encompass knowledge that really affected all of who we are. Again, not just politics or economics, but who we are. If you turn to source number 9, I'm sorry to have you flip back and forth. Actually, turn to page number 4, because we're not going to do the first line of the Mitzvah David. The Mitzvah David explains at the top of page number 4, Tzedek, hi avodah ha'elokim. Tzedek is referring, I don't know where he gets this from exactly, but he says that Tzedek is referring to avodah Hashem, ben adam lemakom, everything that we do, all the mitzvot that we do that are between us and God. Whereas Mishpat is mashi ben adam lechaveiro. Mishpat is everything that is between us and our friends, us and other human beings, how we treat other people. Which is, by the way, I mean, I'll just say this as an aside, that's one of the chidushim of monotheism. Pagan religions in the ancient Near East, the gods couldn't care less about how you treated other people. They just wanted food, I mean, in man's conception of these gods, obviously. But according to pagan belief, the gods cared about being satiated by their worshippers. They wanted the food that they wanted. They wanted the drinks that they wanted. They couldn't care less about how you got there. So if you gave them food by stealing, it didn't matter to them. As long as they were happy, as long as they were, you know, full and satisfied, they didn't care. Ben Adam L'Chaveiro was really, literally, they could not care less about it. It was only about themselves. And so pagan religion only mandated, you know, commandments that were between man and his God, how man should worship his God. Comes Hashem at Matan Torah and says, that's not what I'm about. I actually care about you and about how you treat others. And that's why they say that if you look really closely at Parshat Yitro to Parshat Mishpatim, Brit Sinai, when we get the Torah, we get the Aseret HaDibro, which is, by the way, half and half. And then right afterwards, we go straight into Parshat Mishpatim, which is all about one ox goring another ox and what you should do if your neighbor does this. And Evet Ivri, it's all Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. It's all about the mitzvot that are between two different people. And then we go back to this discussion of the Brit Sinai of Matan Torah. And it's interesting how we go from Matan Torah to Mishpatim to Matan Torah. Why don't we just have Matan Torah and then move on to Mishpatim? Why do we have this sandwich thing going on? So it's just interesting. I think it's Rav Menachem Liebtag, who explains that that's because the sandwich of Judaism, the core of Judaism, the chiddush of what Hashem came and brought us at Matan Torah was really that he cares about how we treat other people. He doesn't just care about himself and how we treat him, but he really also cares about how we treat other people. And so what's interesting here about how Mitzvah David is explaining Mishlei is that Shlomo is trying to teach us about how to do both aspects, right? How to serve Hashem in the best way possible, but also how to treat each other in the best way possible. And then the last piece, which I find, you know, the most interesting, is Umei Sharim. What does that mean in straight things? Bidvar Hamido v'hanhagat ha'adam. This is talking about things that are not mitzvot, not commandments. You won't find them in any list of the 613 mitzvot in the Torah. But they're talking about mido, right? Being a good person, being a nice person. And you think this is very related to Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, which it is, but it's something more than that. Because you won't find it delineated in exactly how to treat another person. It's really just about how we act, our character. Right? It's kind of like we have us between us and Hashem, us and other people, and then us and ourselves. Right, who we are and how we view ourselves, and you know, self-respect often leads to very good midot, etc. And so, according to the Mitzvah David, Shlomo's purpose here in writing these mishalim were in order to enhance all aspects of our, you know, religious persona, both in terms of how we relate to Hashem, how we relate to others, and how we relate to ourselves, and how we have good midot, etc. So that's basically, you know, the three different opinions and what we can learn from them in terms of which mishalim Shlomo wrote and why he wrote Sefer Mishlei, etc. What I would like to focus on for the rest of the night is why did he choose Mishalim in order to transmit his wisdom, right? Shlomo could have used any media through which to transmit his wisdom. We have lots of different media in Tanakh itself in which Hashem transmits his wisdom to us, and Moshe transmits, and all the Nevi'im transmit their wisdom. Shlomo in particular, however, chose the medium of Mashal, of a parable. What I would like to discuss for the rest of the night is what is so unique about a parable that Shlomo specifically chose that, and what is so beneficial about using parables through which to teach us. He obviously didn't only write in parable. We know he wrote Shir HaShirim in song, and he wrote Kohelet in, I guess you could say, as an intellectual discourse or a kind of rant on life. You know, obviously Shlomo himself chooses different media, but the question that I would like to deal with, bless you, today is what is the benefit that we can take most from a mashal. And there are a few different approaches to, you know, what a mashal can bring us, and I think that we can learn a lot from each different approach. Rabbi Yosef Ibn Jekatila, okay, I remember first hearing that name in 10th grade, and I thought my teacher was crazy, because, well, her name is Ibn Jekatila, but it really was his last name. He lived in Spain, in Muslim Spain, obviously. And he wrote a sefer called Sefer HaMishalim in source number 10. He was a grammarian who I think had like a lot of, you know, input into the Hebrew grammar that we know of today. But he wrote a Sefer HaMishalim in which he discusses what a mashal can do. And he discusses specifically why Shlomo wrote Sefer Mishlei. V'hine Shlomo alav ha-shalom kisheratza leharo gold al chachmato. Shlomo, when he wanted to show us the greatness of his chachma, livnei adam, to people, lo yachlu hamon ha'am lehasiga. Most of the people, the masses, could not understand it. Right? It was very hard for the masses to grasp Shlomo's wisdom because he was so smart. It's kind of like they say, you know, sometimes the smartest professors are the worst teachers. Because it's, you know, it's one thing to be smart, it's another thing to be able to impart your knowledge to others. They're two very different skill sets. And so Shlomo had this issue in that he was extremely smart. He was the smartest of all time. But how could he relate to the masses? How could he impart that wisdom that, you know, he had so much of to the people to enable them to take advantage of it? There was a gap that he felt he had to cross. And so what Rabbi Yosef Ibn Jekatila explains is that the only way the masses would be able to grasp Shlomo's wisdom is al yidei hamishalim shetikin lahem. It's through the parables that he wrote for them. How do parables enable the masses to understand his wisdom? V'zeh she'amar hakatzu, sorry, first he brings a quote, v'yoter she'aya kohelet chacham ol limei dar et ha'am. Because Kohelet was, the author of Kohelet, was so smart, ol limei dar et ha'am, he had to, you know, he had to teach his knowledge to the people, v'izein v'chiker v'tikei mishalim harbeh. So he listened, he investigated, he tried to figure out the best way to impart his knowledge to the nation, and therefore he composed many parables. V'hamishalim lo na'asu ela lehavin hadvarim ha'amukim hadakim le'otam she'inam yicholim lehavinam mirov omkam v'dakutam. The reason why Shlomo chose a parable is because a parable enables one to understand very, very profound ideas, very deep and complex concepts, the parable enables those who can't really understand things to understand things that are very, very deep. To those who it's very hard to understand deep ideas, the parable enables them to be accessible. It enables that wisdom to be accessible to them. He's just going to quote lots and lots of things. But basically what he continues to say in Mishlei is that not only is his purpose in order to impart wisdom, but it's also so that the fools can understand, so that the youth can understand, and also so that the wise can understand, which we'll get to in a minute. But certainly we see from the beginning of Mishlei that one of his major purposes, if you look back in source number one, it says that one of his major purposes is so that the fools and the youth can understand what he has to say. And so it seems that in this way, Shlomo was able to distill his great wisdom, his wisdom that was like over everyone's heads, and bring them down to the common level. How do Mishalim do this, though? How are Mishalim able to distill this deep idea and, you know, break it down for people? So the Ramchal, in his Ma'amar HaEkrim, the Ramchal is Rav Moshe Chaim Litzato, who wrote the famous Mesilat Yesharim, you might have heard him before. He also wrote Ma'amar HaEkrim, and he explains how Mishalim do this. How do Mishalim serve to distill really profound and deep concepts and enable them to be accessible to the common man or to the masses? And he says, "B'mishlei hajotim," right, in the simple Mishalim, "hil bishum be'inyanim min ha-teva o ha-tzkunot." What the author of the parables did was that they used language that from nature. From astronomy, right? We think of astronomy as something like way over our heads. But back then, astronomy was like common knowledge. Everyone knew about nature. They all worked the land. And everyone knew about astronomy because they all looked to the stars to know what was going to happen to them. This was common knowledge. And so the Ramchal says that the way that you would take, you know, really deep knowledge and distill it and enable it to be accessible to the masses was by using language that was understandable to them, that they used all the time. And so they borrowed language from science, nature, you know, astronomy, and anything that they used to teach at that time, right, all the wise people used to teach at that time, so they would understand it. But HaKavana lo hayta al ha'inyan ha'tivi otzchuniyi, right? But the intention really wasn't to stop at the natural, at the natural phenomena or the astronomical phenomena that was being discussed. Ela ala so shiratu lirmoz bazeh. But rather, they were hinting to something deeper through this natural phenomena. It's like if you're trying to explain something really complex to your kid, and you just try to use an everyday example of something that they would understand, and then it helps them grasp the more complicated, profound concept. The Ramchal says that's what a parable does. A parable is clothed, he says, v'hilbishuhu v'mashayam v'forsam b'dorad ha'heim min ha'chachamim. A parable basically clothes itself in common language, but really it at the core is this really profound concept or idea. And so the parable enables this profound concept or idea to be understood. Okay. So that is the Rav Yosef Ibn Jigatel's idea, that the whole purpose, the reason why Shlomo used Mishalim as a medium through which to teach B'nai Yisrael is because it enabled B'nai Yisrael to understand him. Right? You really did take his very profound ideas and his deep wisdom and make it accessible to the masses. The way that Rebbetzin Tzipora Heller explains it in her book, More Precious Than Pearls, which is the book on Eisha Chaya, which is at the end of Sefer Mishlei, by the way. The last parak is Eisha Chaya, and I would love to do, I could do a whole year on it. So, I'd love to do that at some point. And in the words of Rebbetzin Tzipora Heller, she explains that in the words of the Ramchal, the function of the mashal is to use outer reality as a vehicle for inner reality. That you take something that's, very easily understood, and you use that to shed light upon something that's not so easily understood, something that's a little bit more hidden. And I think that now we can understand what's going on here, that, the Mishalim really enabled the people to grasp it. The Shir Shirim Rabbah actually says something along these lines in source number 12. And I think, and we're also going to use this as a basis for a lot of the Shirim. Ad shelo amad Shlomo, lo haya adam yachol haskil divrei Torah. This is a radical statement. Okay. The Torah had been around for years and years before Shlomo's life, okay? 800 at least, I believe, maybe even more. Okay, but says Shir Shirim Rabbah, until Shlomo lived, no one understood the Torah. Not one member of B'nai Yisrael understood the Torah. That's a crazy statement. That's pretty radical. Why? Because when she'amad Shlomo, hitzilu hakol sovrin Torah. Once Shlomo lived, everyone understood it. What does Shlomo do? How is that possible? Midavar ledavar, mimashal lemashal, amash Shlomo also dashal Torah. Says the Shir Shirim Rabbah that in Mishlei, what Shlomo does in Mishlei is really through each mashal, he explains something in Torah. He uncovers another issue. And the truth is that we could probably find in almost every single mashal a medrash that relates that mashal to a pasuk in the Torah, that uses that mashal to explain a pasuk in the Torah. And it's quite amazing how you could really, I could have called this shir, Shlomo's Parshanut ala Torah, because they really, the Medrash really does view Sefer Mishlei as Parshanut, as exegesis of the Torah, and it's really amazing that, we can really understand the Torah in a whole new light just based on Shlomo's Mishalim. And this is just another way of seeing how Shlomo made the Torah, or, wisdom in general, accessible to the masses. Like, he's the one who enabled us to understand the Torah, according to Shir Shirim Rabbah. Okay. Again, when I did this as a weekly shir, I tried to connect every shir to the parsha, which I could, because you just could. It was really cool. But anyway, I could teach it to you even when it's not connected to the parsha. But we will do that a lot, try to understand the Torah through the lens of Sefer Mishlei. But we also know that Shlomo's purpose was not just to make his wisdom accessible to the masses. He wasn't just, teaching, freshman course, intro courses in college. He was kind of like the Rambam, right? He was like an intellectual snob. The Rambam didn't want to access the masses. He wanted to fool them. He wanted them to think they knew what they were talking about. He really had his eyes on the, intelligentsia. Shlomo at least wanted both, but he certainly wanted not only the masses to understand, but also the wise ones. In fact, if you look in source number one really quickly, I think I alluded to it before, but after Pasuk Dali, when he says, let Taylif ta'im arma, right, to give fools wisdom, anar darim zima, and youth, knowledge and discretion, Pasuk Hey yishma chacham v'yosef lakach, he also wants the wise people to hear and add to what they already know, v'navon tachbulo ikna, and he also wants the understanding one to know. So, that's a really, really hard job to access both the masses and the wise people at the same time. If you try to give, I teach in high school. If I tried to give one shir to an entire grade, it would be very hard for me. because you have honors kids, you have weak kids, you have everything in between, and it's very hard to, I mean, you should do it, and differentiation is amazing, but it's definitely a hard thing to do, to really access every single kid on their level. And yet, that's what Shlomo wanted to do. He wanted to access the fools and the youth, and he also wanted to access the chachamim and the nevonim, right, the wise ones. How could he do that? And that's exactly where the mashal comes in. Rashi, I think, lends some insight to this. If you look in source number 13, and he says, Lahavin mashal umilitzah. Mishlei itself says that the mashal has both a mashal and a melitza. Here the language is going to be a little confusing, but bear with me. She'yidnu leiv lahavin b'mikra'ot shnei hadrachim. Because every mashal, and we alluded to this before, has two different ways of understanding it. Ha-mashal v'ha-melitza. Right, the words that are, the mashal is, according to Rashi here, the lesson that's learned, even though we use nimshal for that, but okay. And the hamalitza are the words that are being used to express that message. So basically, according to Rashi, we really have to have two sensitivities. We have to be sensitive to the actual words that are being used, and we also have to be sensitive to the lesson that we're supposed to derive from it. So for example, Isha Chaya, we all know, we all think, assume, is talking about one's wife, right? Which is why we all feel so good inside when our husbands sing it to us. On Friday night, we think that, you know, our husbands are talking about us. But I hate to break it to you, but many, many parshanim say that that whole song is actually a mashal to the Torah, for the Torah. There are many different opinions, but some say that the mashal, the understanding that Eshet Chayil is just a love song or really an appreciation of one's wife, is really on a deeper level supposed to be an appreciation of the Torah. And yet Rashi comes along and says, but you don't have to worry, because it's not just about the Torah. Rashi actually on Eshet Chayil has two different pirushim. He goes through the entire shir, explaining what it means to have a connection to the Torah. And then he goes through it again, explaining what it means to have a connection to your wife. And what you should look for in a Talmud Chacham, what you should look for in your wife. Very true to what he says here, in that every mashal really has two layers, at least. Right? Both the words that it's couched in, and also the lesson that we're supposed to derive from it. And that way, perhaps, and I think that the Rambam is going to comment on this as well, but in this way you can really reach two different audiences at the same time. Because the fools and the youth might really only be able to pay attention to the words, let's say. Right? But the wise ones are going to be able to go a little bit deeper. Sorry, yeah.
I just feel like a mashal is so open to interpretation.
Exactly.
So in that way, it becomes problematic also.
Okay.
Because I feel like, sorry, I don't know if this is like a question and answer share or not, but
no, it's fine. Could be.
I feel like, you know, by Shlomo deriving mashal to teach the fools and the wise, it's really, and if you say it's relating to the Torah, then it's almost as if allowing, then saying that the Torah has several interpretations.
Right, which is exactly what Chazal say. Right, because Chazal say Shivim Panim LaTorah.
Isn't that problematic?
Okay, so it's good. You know, I have like a whole thing. I almost every year I get this question from my students. Right, which one's the right answer? Right, how can you have two answers? If Rashi says this thing and Rashbam says this thing, which one happened? Which one is it? And the basic approach of Chazal is Shivim Panim LaTorah. The Torah is actually written with intentional ambiguity, on purpose. Why? Why would the Torah not want us to know what's going on? Why would Hashem write things in ways that are unclear? And the answer is because Hashem wants us to be able to interpret it in different ways. Why? Because every single interpretation comes with its own lesson. And if we only had one way of reading the Torah, then we would only learn one thing from every pasuk or from every word. But if there are multiple ways of understanding the Torah, then there are multiple lessons that we can derive from every word that we can learn from each thing. So you think, wait, but this is the Torah. Isn't this the way that Hashem teaches us? And yet, on the other hand, lo b'shamayim hi, right? The whole idea is that it's not supposed to remain in shamayim. It's supposed to be brought down to the people. And every single human brain comes at something, the same thing, with from a different perspective and has a different answer and a different solution and a different suggestion. And we see that through all the machlokot that we see between the Rishonim and the Achronim. And that's the purpose. That's the point. And so, yes, you know, a lot of us think, like, wait, there's only one way to understand it. No, that's the whole point, is that we're supposed to understand it in a very multi-layered fashion, and that we are supposed to uncover layer after layer after layer. And that's why there's Pshat, and there's Drash, and there's Kabbalah, right? And there are so many different ways of understanding it, and You know, I don't know who sold Yosef in the end. Was it the Midyanim? Was it the Yishma'elim? I don't know. Historically, I don't know which is accurate, but there's something I can learn from the fact that it was the Midyanim. There's something that I can learn from the fact that it was the Yishma'elim. In fact, the lesson that I might be giving at the Eiderkraut Open House is going to relate to this, that, you know, whether we go based on Shat or Drash, we can learn something from both, and that's what's important. So I think that, if anything, it's beneficial for us that Shlomo wrote in this way, because he enables us to uncover. Maybe that's what Shir Shirim Rabbah means. Maybe they mean that all the nation understood only one level of the Torah, but once Shlomo came around, they saw that there were many different layers of understanding the Torah. Yes, there are dangers. I hear there are risks involved in that, but I think that is what Hashem's intention actually was. So the Rambam actually says something along these lines. Amar Afacham, and he actually quotes Shlomo here in another pasuk, Tabuchi Zahav B'maskiyot Kesef Davar Dibora Ofanav. So I'll just quote here from the English. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. What on earth is going on? V'zeshehu omer shehadavar shehu bal shnei panim ritzonu lomar sheishlo nigla v'nistar. Something that has two different meanings, meaning a revealed meaning and a hidden meaning. Tzarech sheyeh niglehu tov kakesef. The outside, the words that it's written with, has to be as valuable as silver. V'tzarech sheyeh tocho tov miniglehu. But the inside, the deeper hidden meaning, has to be even greater than the words. It has to be a value of gold. But if you realize, both of them are a value. It's not like we're saying it has to be, you know, wood covered in, or, you know, wood covering gold. No, it's silver covering gold. And so we see that the words are just as important. I mean, not necessarily just as important, but very important. Not necessarily as important as the lesson, but important nonetheless. And so perhaps in this way, we can understand that both the Nistar and the Nigla were specifically, you know, Shlomo wrote with intention to impart both the Nigla and the Nistar, both the hidden meaning and the revealed meaning, the outer reality, so to speak, and the inner reality, so that he can access both audiences at the same time, both the fools and the youth on the one hand, and the wise and the understanding on the other hand. And I think that that's really something that we, together in Rosh Hashem, as we continue throughout these monthly shiurim, will try to get at. We'll try to understand both the mashal and the melitza, the mashal and the nimshal, right? Both the way that Shlomo writes very clearly on the surface level, but also trying to extract the deeper meanings. Because, you know, we probably have a bunch of everything. You know, hopefully we all have youth within us as well. Hopefully we're not fools, but I think that we all have different ways of approaching the text, and I think that Shlomo intends for us to take all these different meanings out. And perhaps because of that, right, that's why Shlomo chose Mishalim, both in order to make his wisdom accessible to us, but also in order to reach us all at different points, whether it's at different points in our lives or at different, you know, different levels of intelligence or different levels of experience or, you know, different from different perspectives. We all come at this from a fresh perspective. And so, Mishalim and together, we'll be able to now go into Sefer Mishlei. Like I said, this wasn't a typical shir, so to speak. Most of the shiurim will be a nugget of Torah, but I wanted to give you guys an overview of what we're going to be learning. So I hope that you enjoyed. I hope this worked. And have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you.